Mexican store!
This is your game to me! If you think it's a game, get the f*** off of this bus!
Everybody, welcome one, welcome all, and welcome back to the Believe in Iowa State podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Carter.
And I'm your host, Cody Vanciola.
Cody, welcome back. Man, I wasn't able to really watch SummerSlam, but I looked at the recap and the highlights that I watched were insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so pretty much kind of a short summary before we get into the main content. SummerSlam happened over the weekend, and there were quite a few things that went on. I think the big highlights of the show were obviously Brock Lesnar is back in WWE. I was not expecting that at all, but he's back, and it looks like he'll be feuding with John Cena as John Cena continues on his retirement tour. Cody Rhodes is your new undisputed WWE champion. He defeated John Cena in that street fight. And then speaking of elsewhere, Seth Rollins now. It's apparently looks like the injury was not as serious as we thought it was. He cashes in on CM Punk, fulfilling his promise to make sure as long as he's breathing that CM Punk is not a world champion. So he cashes in on CM Punk after CM Punk had defeated Gunther in the Night One main event to become the world heavyweight champion. So Seth Rollins is now the new world heavyweight champion. I'm curious to see how they're going to handle that on tonight's edition of Monday Night Raw here in about an hour. Other highlights include the TLC match, which was crazy. That was a chaos. I was here for it. We also had Drew McIntyre, Logan Paul defeating Randy Orton, Jelly Roll. Jelly Roll was the celebrity guest, and he had a really good match, so really good to see. And then Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss are officially now the new women's tag team champions. They defeated the Judgment Day's Roxanne Perez and Raquel Rodriguez on Saturday. Becky Lynch retained her Intercontinental Championship against Lyra Valkyria in their no disqualification match. To end it off here, this quick summary, Dominic Mysterio retained his Intercontinental Championship against AJ Styles. And we've heard the rumors that this may be the last SummerSlam for AJ Styles. So we'll have to see how AJ Styles' career will go. But that's just a quick summary of the main hitters for the SummerSlam card. And me personally, I think the SummerSlam was better than WrestleMania.
It was definitely better than WrestleMania.
Yeah, I just think with like the way it was booked and all that and like all the things that came out, I think John Cena, I'm really excited for this rest of John Cena retirement tour.
I agree, yeah. This Lesnar-Cena feud is going to be interesting. So that's something that we're going to look up about. But we do have some football news. The coaches poll came out, and Iowa State is ranked. If you could share your screen with us, that'd be great.
Yep. So this is the, at least on CBS Sports, so this is the coaches poll that was released by CBS Sports. There's a lot more, but we're taking a look at theirs for reference. But generally speaking, you have your, so we're going from the bottom to the top. At number 25 will be Boise State. They're coming off their run to the college football playoff with their star running back, Ashton Gentry. Really curious to see how Boise State's going to do coming off of that successful year. Texas Tech, they put a lot of money into their football program. We're going to see where they are in terms of the Big 12. BYU is going to have a lot the answer for, especially quarterback, with the departure of Jake Retzlaff. Iowa State, as we mentioned before, the departure of the two talented wide receivers, Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll. We'll see where Iowa State's, how they're going to respond to that after their historic year going on, win 11 games and winning the Pop-Tarts Bowl. Texas A&M always is going to be here for one reason or another. We've seen them here before. Will they finally crack the 8-4 ceiling? I'm not sure. We'll have to look out for them. Kansas State, the development of Avery Johnson is going to be the continued story for the Wildcats. And we'll see how they look when they face off against Iowa State in week 0 in Ireland. Indiana, coming off their historic year, going to the college football playoff under first-year head coach Kirk Cignetti as he enters his second year coaching the Indiana Hoosiers. The Tennessee Volunteers come in at 18. obviously the departure of Nico Iamaliava. Will be really interesting to see how Tennessee will do as they look to reap the success of going to the college football playoff for the first time. But the Florida Gators really overachieved, I'd say, given their schedule. I mean, you can comment more on Florida if you want to, Tyler.
Yeah. Florida, I mean, they had a rough start to the season last year, and they finished out strong, finishing 8-5. And DJ Lagway looks to have a great year. However, they have some offensive weapons that are unproven. Defensively, they'll be a lot better, but we're going to have to see offensively. I think they do have a good running back room, but this receiver room is young and unproven, so we'll see how that goes for the Gators.
Yep. And then at 16, we have SMU. The Mustangs are also coming off a college football playoff appearance. Basically, first year in the ACC, and is one field goal. Like, the difference between them and winning the ACC title was a walk-off field goal by another team we see on here, which we'll get to a little later. Kevin Jennings is returning for SMU, so I'm really curious to see how SMU will do now that they've officially shown that they are a contender in the ACC.
Yeah. I mean, man, you look at that third row. I don't know. You look at Illinois, South Carolina, and Michigan. Out of those three, who do you think is going to disappoint the most? Because I just have a feeling that South Carolina is going to regress back to the mean. I don't know. And then Michigan has uncertainty at quarterback, and whoever the quarterback is not really going to have any weapons at all, to be honest. So I'm sort of dumbfounded that why Michigan is at 14, or why they're above Ole Miss, who, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mentioned Ole Miss at 15. We talked about the three teams of 14 Michigan, 13 South Carolina, and at 12 Illinois. Illinois is being propped up as a dark horse to go to the college football playoffs. So I'm really I'm curious to see how this Illinois team will do this year. Given Illinois' schedule, I think we took a look at briefly, maybe it was off air, but it looks like they are setting themselves up for a really good year, and the cards fall right for Illinois. They could find themselves in the college football playoff as an at-large.
Yeah, and they have a huge game at the beginning of the year. I believe it's on September 20th where they have to go on the road to Indiana. So Illinois-Indiana could definitely be a meeting of dark horse teams that could possibly make a run in the Big Ten.
And I mean, also even before that, one team that's not on here, but I know they're getting some noise, the Duke Blue Devils out of the ACC.
Yeah.
Illinois has to travel to Duke. And this Duke team could potentially have themselves another successful year, because I believe they went up against Ole Miss in their bowl game. And did Duke win that game, or did Ole Miss win?
I think Ole Miss did.
Okay. But yeah, Duke is shaping up to be a solid second-tier team in the ACC. But getting back to our coaches poll, at number 11 is the Arizona State Sun Devils. Obviously, they're coming off of winning the Big 12 from bottom of the conference predicted this time last year to being first in the conference, winning the conference championship, and almost beating Texas in the Peach Bowl. So a lot is like looking good for Kenny Dillingham and company. Obviously, the departure of Cam Scadaboo is going to be a major concern, but it looks like Sam Levitt will be the main guy going forward for the Arizona State Sun Devils, and I'm really excited for their season, especially when they come to Ames on November 1st.
Yeah, and it looks like in the run game, they're going with a three-headed monster attack, leading with Kanye Udo from Army. So that should be interesting to see how that three-back tandem and run game will try to basically help the departure of Cam Scadaboo going to the NFL.
Yep. Yep, and now we are cracking into our top 10 of the coaches poll. So at 10, we have the Miami Hurricanes. They're coming off another like disappointing year for them, because they started out really hot. They were number 4 in the country at one point, and they were looking like the team to beat in the ACC. And then they stumble towards the end with losses at Georgia Tech and at Syracuse to boot themselves out of an ACC championship game and potentially be in the college football playoff. And then obviously going to the Pop-Tarts Bowl and losing to Iowa State. But for Miami, to replace Cam Ward, they bring in Carson Beck, which I'm really curious about that transition. I think Carson Beck, I feel like he doesn't have the same like ceiling as Cam Ward does.
It doesn't.
Yeah, so I don't know. With Miami, they're always going to be one of those teams that like sound like they could finally crack winning a conference title or going to the conference championship game. But I don't know. Like, I have to see it because I think I saw a tweet that said or I heard something that Mario Cristobal is 4-8 in November. So Mario Cristobal has to find a way to get over that, exercise those demons, so Miami can actually be successful and get back to what they were under Coach Jimmy Johnson.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, they're looking to be, you know, they're trying to look, you know, chase the ghost of the 2000s too, if you want to go be even be more recent.
Well, yeah, that 2001 team under, who was it? Was it Butch Davis or Dennis Erickson, I think.
Yeah, Dennis Erickson, yeah.
Yeah, that 2001 team, so many NFL guys.
And that's what they're chasing after, so they're going to try to see if they can bring that U mentality back to Coral Gables.
Yep. As we continue on in our top 10, we have number 9, the LSU Tigers. Now, I have not heard too much about LSU other than Garrett Nussmeier being a potential Heisman candidate, because we did see in our when we took a look at the Heisman Trophy odds that Garrett Nussmeier was among the top 10. So with that, do you think Garrett Nussmeier can make a leap that can be worthy of potentially being a Heisman winner? And if so, what else does LSU have to do besides Garrett Nussmeier improving his play in order to get back to what they were when they had Jaden Daniels at quarterback?
I think with them, you know, the receivers definitely going to have to have a consistent run game. Their run game is pretty good, so that I think it's really with them is going to depend on the defense, because the defense let them down in a lot of games last year, which is one of the reasons why they were 8-4. And of course, Jaden Daniels had a higher ceiling because the defense was still bad then too, but he was able to win. I think they went 9-3 with him. So, like, they're sort of in the same thing of going 8-4, 9-3. So if they shore up the defense, or maybe the defense is just bad and not like awful. If the defense is bad, they could probably go like 10-2.
But I think LSU is going to be gunning for more than just an at-large bid. They're gunning for the SEC championship title.
Yeah. I mean, it's honestly going to be sort of a cluster at the top, because you look at all these teams, four teams in the SEC in the top 10, and Texas and Georgia play each other. Alabama and LSU play each other. I believe Georgia and Alabama play each other again too. So, I mean, the SEC is going to cannibalize one another. So, yeah, one of these teams is going to end up 10-2. Obviously, Texas is the conference favorite right now, but it's honestly going to depend on the growth of Arch Manning for Texas. I mean, they're in a whole new era right now, and we'll see how his development goes, but it's not guaranteed, but we'll see. We've seen his upside and what he can do in like garbage time minutes, but let's see what he can do against SEC defense. I'm really, really interested to see how Texas responds after last season's or the last 2 years of coming off of playoff appearances.
Yep. And then speaking of one of those teams that LSU will be playing, Alabama is coming in at the number 8 spot. There are a lot of noise from the Alabama fan base saying that they are robbed of a college football playoff spot by SMU, and they're coming off a 9-3 season and a bowl loss to the Michigan Wolverines. So a lot of noise is coming out of Tuscaloosa for their quote-unquote robbery. So Alabama's going to have to prove that they still are a class of the SEC by not dropping the games they shouldn't drop, because they dropped a couple games that they should not have. Obviously, Vanderbilt and Oklahoma were the two. And then the third loss in the regular season, I'm trying to remember who was that to.
They lost to, it was him, Alabama, and who else did they lose to? It was South Carolina. Not South Carolina, it was Vanderbilt, Oklahoma.
I'll take a look here for them. So it was Vanderbilt, Oklahoma, and Tennessee. So realistically, Tennessee. So realistically, that year Alabama should have been 11-1, but obviously a couple of games they should not have lost. They lost, so they're going to have to right those wrongs in order to get back to what they were under Nick Saban and under second year head coach Caleb DeBoer. So a lot of noise being made by Alabama fans, but it's time for you to prove it on the field and prove that you still are a kings of the SEC and you're not going to let Georgia or Texas take that throne from you.
Yeah, and I believe Ty Simpson right now is the projected starter for the Crimson Tide, so we're going to see what Ty Simpson can do. And they do host of the notable games. They do host Wisconsin in Tuscaloosa in week 3.
Really, that I think that game of Wisconsin, I think Alabama should take care of that. Wisconsin's not the Wisconsin we think they are. If Alabama does not convincingly take care of Wisconsin, especially it being at home, then there are going to be some question marks that I have for them. But also, that Florida State game, they should actually take care of Florida State. I think Florida State should be better, but I don't think they're on the same tier as Alabama. So Alabama should be able, we would have to look at the Florida State and Wisconsin games for Alabama to see where they are going to be in the SEC. All right, so moving from the SEC to the Big Ten, we have at number 7, the Oregon Ducks. Their first year in the Big Ten, they went 13-0. They won the conference, but got absolutely trounced by Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. Now, one thing I will say, that Ohio State team, which we'll talk about later in this top 10, that Ohio State team was playing with a fire because they took that loss to Michigan personally. And I mean, they went full scorched earth on everybody they went up against. We saw what Oregon did. Ohio State was just, they were just on a different, they were on a different echelon in that Rose Bowl game. But still, pretty solid, good year for Oregon in their first year in the Big Ten.
Anytime that you can win a conference in your first year, being in there is always a good thing. It's just, they just didn't have it in the Rose Bowl. Usually a game where they usually dominate because they're not that far. They're only like hours away from LA. So that's usually the bowl game that they play in. But Oregon has a new starter in Dante Moore, who was at Michigan State and also at UCLA, coming from UCLA. So it's going to be interesting to see how Dante Moore comes along. He's a blue chip prospect, I believe, a 5-star. So Oregon starting off with a new in a new era. If you really look at a lot of these teams are going in different directions as QB. There's a few teams really even in the top 25, some experience come back. Or most of them do, but like if you look at the top 10 teams, some top 10 teams, new beginnings, especially for the very, very talented teams.
Yeah, so really curious to see how Oregon will do. And I mean, for them, they've got some pretty difficult road games or some difficult games on the road. So taking a look at their schedule, I have on my screen, in September 27th, they got to go to Penn State. They got to go to Happy Valley. And I'm assuming this will be the whiteout game. Like, there's no doubt that Penn State would love nothing more than to get a win over Oregon and really make the first step into breaking out of their ceiling. Does Penn State, because they looked really, I think they had a really good run. I think they had probably a favorable run in the college football playoff, but I mean, they were right there with Notre Dame up until the end. So I think that's a good step for James Franklin and company, and will be good for Drew Aller in the running back room. Because boy, oh boy, if Drew Aller can improve on his play from last year, even with the departure of Tyler Warren, and get those running backs really going, then I think Penn State could finally get back to national relevance and potentially play for a national championship again.
With Penn State, it's going to be interesting to see, because with them last year, it was the Tyler Warren show because it didn't have any competent receivers. But I believe they did bring some receivers in by way of the transfer portal. So I think that's going to unlock having good receivers. I think that's a way that can unlock Drew Aller and take him to an even higher level than he was before last year. Because Andy Nikoladecki was a revelation for that offense.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, so moving on from Oregon, and Oregon we have at number six, the Clemson Tigers. Out of the ACC, they had a really wild year, but that ACC conference was such a wild, like, wild roller coaster things. Because, like, you thought for the most part it was going to be Miami, but then they faltered down the line. And Clemson, I mean, they kind of stumbled at points in time. They got trounced by the Georgia Bulldogs to open their season. Then they went on and they lost to Louisville as well. Had to skate Pitt, but then also lost to South Carolina, but managed to win, like we mentioned earlier, against SMU in the conference championship game on a walk-off field goal. And, I mean, they actually put up not too bad of a fight against Texas. It's just Texas eventually pulled away in the first round of college football playoff. But still, going to the college football playoff, I mean, this Clemson team is, I think the ACC is Clemson's to lose, like, once again. As long as Dabo Sweeney is at the helm at Clemson, there's, like, nobody else is going to touch Clemson. Outside of Clemson, the second tier, I would guess you would have to put would be Louisville, SMU. You could throw Miami in there as well. But, yeah, but Clemson is the standard in the AC.
Yeah, with Cade Klubnik coming back, him probably going to be being a preseason Heisman favorite. You have a really, really good group of receivers coming back for Clemson. So, like you said, I think they're primed to go on a deep run this year with Cade Klubnik.
Yep. All right, and then moving into our top five now, we're going to start at number five, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, who are coming off a national championship game appearance. Obviously, they had that week two loss to NIU, which I think, set up a lot of panic buttons in the general college football world, but they proved that they were one of the top teams. I mean, they rattled off nine straight, and granted, I think their schedule, like, it wasn't exactly the greatest schedule, but, I mean, still, when you're beating teams convincingly like they did against Army, I mean, and then looking at Louisville as well, they beat them by seven. Just the way they were beating teams, I think, showed that they can, like, be up with these, like, top-tier teams. But what will it take for Notre Dame to not only just get back to the national championship game, but actually win the national championship?
Well, I think for them, like, really, because this is also, like you said, this is another team that's just moved on from another quarterback. Riley Leonard is gone now. So CJ Carr steps in as a blue chip quarterback. So with them, I think now they're able, like, Marcus Freeman is an excellent recruiter. So they have the skill guys. I think they're going to be relying heavily on Jeremiah Love, who I think is going to be who is a Doak Walker semifinalist right now, or a preseason finalist right now. So I think they're going to definitely lean on the run game and play really good defense. And I think if CJ Carr comes along like a thing, and with the good receivers that they have and tight ends and a good offensive line, I think Notre Dame, that's the recipe for Notre Dame to win a national championship.
And I mean, for Notre Dame, they're going to have some, like, really early, like, the first half of the season, they've got a couple of games that to look out for. They opened their season on Sunday, August 31st, against Miami in Miami. I know the history of this, and a lot of people know the history of Notre Dame Miami. Catholics versus convicts really comes to mind, so I'm really excited for that game on Sunday, August 31st. Then they host the Texas A&M Aggies in South Bend. Really curious about this one as well, because this will be another good test for both teams, actually, and I think that will determine which of the two will have higher, like, has a higher ceiling and whatnot, and probably be, like, who's a contender and who's a pretender. They do have to, and then at the end of the month, they do have to travel to Arkansas. So we're really curious about this road trip to Arkansas.
Yeah, the people down in Fayetteville are already hyped up for that game. So that's going to be a tough environment, especially in the SEC.
Yep. after the week after, they'll host the Boise State Broncos and the North Carolina State Wolfpack in back-to-back weeks. Two teams that I think could potentially like shoot, especially North Carolina State. I think North Carolina State has potential to be in that second tier in the ACC. I find them in the third tier right now, but I mean, that first half of the schedule is really going to tell me a lot about the Fighting Irish.
That Boise game is going to be intriguing. Is that the week after the Arkansas game?
Yeah.
Is that, and that's at home for them, right?
Yeah, it's in South Bend.
Oh, man.
So
that could be a letdown look ahead for them for that Arkansas game. They got to be focused on the Arkansas game because they, who knows? Boise might be good again. They could be looking towards the home matchup again, a possibly ranked matchup against Boise State. So that's going to be something to look out for during the season.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Moving on to number four, we have the reigning defending SEC champions, the Georgia Bulldogs. They come in at number four, and obviously the departure of Carson Beck as a something like notable for them, and Georgia is looking to get back to the national championship. Obviously they had one back to back in 21 and 22, and the Bulldogs are looking to get back to winning national championships. Kirby Smart obviously is a great coach, and I have no doubt that he'll coach his guys to really be up in the top tier of the SEC. That defense is always a unit for me to look out for because they are consistently one of the better units in all of college football.
Yes, they're going to be elite defensively like always. What's going to be the key for them is going to be Gunnar Stockton, the guy that took over for Carson Beck, is his development because he's going to be a guy that's going to be starting his first year on his own. So it's going to be interesting to see. They're definitely probably going to lean on defense and run game. You're probably going to see something like in the late 20-teens, like when Jake Fromm was there. So I'm thinking about maybe they're probably going to run that type of offense to where it's more leaning on the run game and playing defense with Georgia. So they won't ask Gunnar Stockton to do too much. So, but we'll see about Georgia.
Yep, and Georgia, we already mentioned their game against Alabama. They'll host Alabama at the end of September. Georgia does have to travel to Neyland Stadium to take on the Tennessee Volunteers as an early road test in the SEC for the Bulldogs.
I believe that. Don't they host Texas this year, too?
Yes, they also host Texas in November. That'll be November 15th. They do also host Ole Miss October 18th as well. And then they'll have the world's largest cocktail party against the Florida Gators to start November. And then at the end of the year, they do take on the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets in Atlanta. And Georgia Tech was right there with Georgia up until the end of last season when they went to like multiple overtimes. I think it was like, what, 7 or 8 overtimes?
Yeah, and Georgia Tech overtime.
And Georgia Tech was just right there. They just couldn't execute in the end. But Georgia Tech could potentially, like, if they can do what they did there, but actually able to finish, that might be a rivalry week upset. And that could potentially spoil Georgia's season.
Yeah, Georgia Tech is, I think they'll be a lot better, and they're definitely going to try to play spoiler in that final game.
Yep. All right, so moving to a team that we talked about earlier with Orkin, we have number three, the Penn State Nittany Lions. We mentioned they're coming off a semifinal appearance. It was an Orange Bowl appearance against Notre Dame. They did also make the conference championship game to take on Oregon. And I think they're looking to get right back. They're continue the momentum there and potentially get to the national championship game. So we mentioned already Oregon, going to host Oregon Saturday, September 27th, which we assume will be the whiteout. And then at the end of October, Penn State will have to travel to Kinnick Stadium to take on the Iowa Hawkeyes. And knowing the recent history of Penn State at Iowa, it's not going to be an easy game for them.
No, it's definitely not, especially if Iowa comes in there with one loss. And night games at Kinnick are absolutely crazy. So, yeah, Kinnick is going to be rocking if Iowa is actually better than what people expect them to be. And you know, for Penn State, Cody, it's basically if not now, when. Like, if there were any year where things had to come together, it's got to be this year, especially when you see Ohio State basically with new beginnings, with a new young quarterback. So if not now, when for Penn State?
Yeah. Then yeah, speaking of Penn State, after Penn State's bye week in the end of October, November 1st, Penn State has to travel to the Horseshoe to take on the Ohio State Buckeyes. Yeah, mentioned it. If not now, then when will it be for Penn State? And for Penn State, it looks like, I'm looking at Yahoo Sports. I assume this is the default where they put like 6 p.m., but I would have to see like as it gets closer to the game times when they'll be. But if it is a night game for Iowa Penn State, I do not like Penn State's chances.
Yeah, and I remember when we were talking about possibly Iowa State, Arizona State for game day, but knowing that now that you said that Penn State, Ohio State is that week, that's where they're going. They're definitely going to Columbus.
Unless they do Big Noon, because Big Noon has tended to do like quite a bit with Ohio that's State. True. So
Fox is definitely going to take that game, but you already know College Game Day is going to be there too.
Yeah. But anyways, outside of the three big games for them, they also host Indiana, they host Nebraska, and yeah, that's really like those are the marquee games for Penn State season to really look out for. So number two, we just mentioned them. We have the Ohio State University Buckeyes. They're coming off a national championship. Will Howard obviously was the conductor in that, but it was Jeremiah Smith was such an elite weapon for them. And I believe Jeremiah Smith is back because Jeremiah Smith was what, only a freshman at the time?
Yes. And there was this crazy video where he was in a press conference saying that there's honestly sometimes where he wasn't even trying. I'm like, you weren't even trying? And you were that good? What? Whoa.
Okay. If that's you, not even trying, I don't even want to know what would happen if he's fully locked in.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, wait a minute. So I wonder how good he is fully locked in. Like, what?
Yeah. Like, wait, was it him that, like, I saw, like, a clip of, like, a viral clip of, like, somebody's, like, workout, and they would climb, like, the support beams, like those support steel beams on a stadium. Was that Jeremiah Smith?
Yes, that's him.
Dude, I saw that. That was all over like college football Twitter for the last few days. Just that dude going up. That's nuts. Like, that's one of your workouts is just casually climbing up a support beam. Dear God. Yeah. Well, for Ohio State, they're going to get a really nice test week one as they get to host the Texas Longhorns. Now, Big Noon. What a beautiful start to your season, and what a beautiful start for your new quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get thrown. Julian Sands is going to get thrown in the fire early.
Right.
So we'll see if he's going to be ready for that. Yeah,
not even early. This is like the first game of the year. You're getting thrown to the wolf. You're getting thrown to the Longhorns, so good luck.
Right.
So after that, we mentioned they get to host Penn State. Looking at their schedule, I'm seeing this is a really favorable schedule. I mean, the Illinois game on September or October 11th, that one is one to look out for because that could potentially be a marquee win for Illinois. They get the win over Ohio State. That could boost them into the college football playoff talks. And then at the end of the year, we have the game and Ohio State. Oh, boy. I don't know when Ryan Day is going to be able to do this. Like, will Ryan Day finally get another win over the Michigan Wolverines? Because that has been the one thing that Ohio State fans have been calling for Ryan Day's head for is his inability to beat Michigan, especially when Ohio State is on paper the superior team.
And now we look forward to the number one team in the coaches poll, the Texas Longhorns. Texas coming off, I believe, back-to-back 11-1 seasons, losing twice to Georgia. And first time they got beat pretty handily at home, and then the second time they lost in overtime in the SEC championship game. So Texas is showing really, really good momentum being first in the SEC. So, but like I said earlier, it's really going to depend on Arch Manning and development of these young guys. I think that's the key for them this year, is how is he going to his talent gonna translate? We know he has talent, but how is he going to do?
Yeah. For Texas, I mean, yeah, obviously that Ohio State game, that's going to be the proof. That's going to be the proving ground for not only Ohio State's young quarterback, but also Arch Manning. So we're going to see two new quarterbacks like who really are going to be at the helm, and curious to see which one can lead their team to a win and what's going to be the first like major domino for the college football playoff. Then after that, I'm looking at their schedule. Texas has a pretty favorable schedule before that Georgia game. Because, yeah. I mean, let's see. They're going to the Swamp. And, I mean, that Swamp game could be tough. Because, I mean, Florida did beat Ole Miss. Like, they had those, yeah. I think a few other upsets for the Gators. So, if Florida can really improve, especially with DJ Lagway, if DJ Lagway can show he can be a reliable quarterback, that's going to be a watch-out game for them. And that could potentially be a letdown game, because the week after that, they have the Red River Shootout against Oklahoma. And you know, And I say this, it doesn't matter what the rankings are. It doesn't matter where the teams are. If it's a rivalry game, those two teams are just going to just have a Western style, like bar fight.
Yeah.
So that could potentially be a secret, like a letdown game in the Swamp before they have the Red River Shootout. After that, they get some relatively easy road games against Kentucky and Mississippi State. Those should be taken care of.
Yeah, take over for a bit. I got to take care of something. So just
all right. With Cody being gone, real quick, there were a few nuggets that I'd like to share, at least from the football training camp standpoint. There are a few notable players that they said have stood out. Chase Soule being one of them. And I don't know if you got to watch any of the press conference from today, but I found it very, very interesting. I know Campbell said that the receiver room is coming along with this crazy, crazy competition in that room right now.
Yeah. I think I'm looking, I'm just watching the clip right now from Jeff Dubroff at KCCI. I really love what they do there, KCCI. So I'm just going to show the clip here from the press conference, like you mentioned.
What any sound?
You can't hear that? Okay. Well, can't hear that, but basically Matt Campbell is talking about, so he's looking, like what he's looking for in his starters. I mean, in description here, he says like consistency is a short, sweet answer. But, I mean, that makes sense for Campbell and staff, because consistency is going to be key, and obviously the competition in camp is going to be huge. Yeah, but, I mean, I'm really excited for, like, what we have at wide receiver, because, like, who knows? Like, obviously the 1 and 2 are going to be projected to be Soule and Townsend, but that 3 could be between Daniel Jackson and Isaiah Alston or Eli Green and Dom Overby. So there's quite a few. There's a few possibilities for our offense as we get closer to football season, and that defense we're going to have to really look for. Like we mentioned, that defensive line has to make the leaps getting to QB, the linebacker room, as long as they stay healthy. And then that secondary under the leadership of John Tez Williams, like I'm real excited. And I saw that Trey Bell is looking pretty solid in solid training camp as well. Got himself an interception. So Trey Bell is somebody to look out for.
Another guy to look out for is Keijon Cummins Coleman, who has had a really, really good practice, and that was reported by Alex Busey of 24/7 Iowa State page. So watch out for him to maybe be a part of this rotation. It's definitely going to be somebody that we don't think that's going to be starting at some point in the season. The Lord willing that we don't get decimated by injuries again.
Oh God!
But yeah, man. Is there anything else that you wanted to bring up? Because I know those are like the main topics that I wanted to cover today.
NCAA tournament expansion.
Yes. Yes.
We saw, so earlier today, Dan Gavitt, so this is on 3, they reported that Dan Gavitt released a statement stating that the NCAA tournament will not be expanding, at least for the 2026 edition, or talks about expanding is off the table. But they look to resume talks for the 2027 tournament and beyond, should the expansion happen. So a lot of this stems from the possibility of March Madness being extended to either 72 or 76 teams. Pete Thamel reported previously in late June that the decision could be coming in the next few weeks in their meetings. Ultimately, no decision came in July, and Gavitt made it official. And Charlie Baker reported during Big 12 meetings that the goal would be to expand the tournament if there was a decision, and confirmed that a 72 or 76 team bracket being an option. Charlie Baker said, like, that would be the goal, which is why the window to negotiate is probably sometime early summer. Greg Sankey had his statement regarding expansion, saying that expansion didn't come up much during the conference's spring meetings, and said that things didn't really go anywhere. He introduced them to the men's basketball coaches, and they had clear conversations, but sounds like they weren't talking, that it was unanimous that they did not want to expand the tournaments. Yeah. 72 or 76. I do not. Would you be on board for a 72 or 76 team NCAA tournament? I don't think we can hear you, but
I don't know.
Yeah, apologies for the technical issues, but give me a thumbs up or down for NCAA tournament expansion. We're trying to relive here, but it sounds like no.
Okay. I say no, because the more teams that you add, you're going to be diluting the product. Honestly, 68 is where it should stay and what it should be. Yes, you're going to be creating more revenue, but like you're basically going to start rewarding mediocrity, and then you're going to start adding more teams that shouldn't be in there, like some middle of the road SEC team that struggled, and then they just have a little bit of a run. They're going to make it. Or a team in the Big Ten, they're going to make it. Like,
Yeah.
Like, and even with this, it's not really even the best way to try to find the champion, because it's literally single elimination. Now, that makes it more exciting, but it may not be the most effective way to truly find a champion.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm saying no. I'm okay. This 68 format is perfect. Like, I'm good with it. I mean, they basically have not cared for the first four or whatever in Dayton, Ohio. So it's like, what's the point of having that if you're just going to expand? You're basically just not caring about that first four. And I find myself watching the first four oddly enough, because this past edition, there were some really good highlights in that first four.
Definitely. It was good. I mean, I will say though, a lot of people were complaining last year about the lack of upsets, but I mean, those last three rounds, Cody, were absolute cinema. The Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, and the Final Four and the National Championship delivered.
Yeah, insane. There are some classes. I mean, Alabama hitting, 20 some threes against BYU. Which ironically was BYU's game. So Alabama basically being BYU at their own game. And then you had, I'm trying to think of the Elite Eight. What were some good matches in the Elite Eight?
So Texas Tech had that 10-point lead and then Florida came back.
Yeah. I think this was after Texas Tech had come back against Arkansas in the Sweet 16. So How about that? And then the Final Four. Oh, that Florida-Auburn. Yeah, it was Florida-Auburn, I believe.
That Florida-Auburn game was a classic.
Yep, and then the Houston comeback against Duke, that was a classic. And then the national championship, that absolute thing of beauty. I was, hoping for Houston to win that, but I wasn't even mad that Florida won the title.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were done for in that one spot where Houston was just D'ing them up, and they were up by 12, but Florida just kept slowly chipping away, and they did all what they did all tournament, and they ended up winning the national championship.
Yep. So, who knows? I mean, college football's right now, but I'm really excited for basketball, because who knows what we're gonna be coming into. I need to see, just take a look at some college basketball non-con matchups. Obviously,
let's talk about. I mean, I don't know if you heard some of the reports, but if you listen to the most recent episode of Second Fanatic, Marion Bateman is really, really pushing to be the starting two guard. So that's really, really something to mainly pay attention, because we talked about him possibly maybe being a starting guy, but him really, really impressing the coaching staff, that's really a really, really good thing.
Sure. Yeah, and then real quick, we're just going to hit on some non-con matches of men's basketball before we head out. Take a look. Tuesday, December 2nd is going to be really interesting. You got Florida traveling to Cameron Indoor, take on Duke. You got North Carolina traveling to Rupp Arena, take on Kentucky. And then take a look here. Texas A&M traveling to Pitt. That could be a sleep. That should be a pretty good matchup.
Is this the ACC-SEC challenge?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, the ACC-SEC challenge. You know what? That'd probably be a good idea to look at. SEC-ACC. Because I think the Big 12, we don't have anything in the Big 12, right? Because the deal expired for the Big 12.
I thought we did something with the Big East.
I think that expired last year. Expired after last year. But, I mean, we can hit on this SEC-ACC challenge real quick if I can find one. 25. Yeah. Duke, Florida at Cameron Indoor. Florida State, Georgia in Tallahassee. Miami, Florida at Ole Miss. North Carolina, Kentucky. Notre Dame hosting Mizzou. Texas A&M traveling to Pitt. Syracuse hosting Tennessee. Carolina hosting Virginia Tech. Wake Forest hosting Oklahoma. Got LSU traveling to Boston College. Alabama hosting Clemson. Mississippi State traveling to Georgia Tech. Arkansas hosting Louisville. Auburn hosting NC State. Vanderbilt hosting SMU. And Virginia traveling to Texas. So those are some like really things to look out for. Yeah, and then speaking of Mizzou, the Border War. Oh, dude, when you get the Border War at Allen Fieldhouse, boy, that thing is going to be... Allen Fieldhouse is going to be rocky for the Border War.
Sure is, because I believe the last time they were in Allen Fieldhouse, Kansas destroyed Missouri.
Yeah, the last two times, if I'm not mistaken. The last two times. The revival of the Border War and then the 23 edition where, yeah. So, I think that would be a good way to end it off here. Take it away, Tyler.
All right, guys. With that, thank you guys for listening to the Believe in Iowa State podcast. Thank you for bearing with us through the issues that we've had. You guys are the best fans ever. Few things before we go, a few shameless plugs. We are a top 15 sports podcast in the state of Iowa, and also a top 40 most listened to sports podcast nominated by FeedSpot. So thank you, FeedSpot, for being great supporters of this podcast. Thank you, state of Iowa listeners. Thank you, everybody who listens to this podcast. Also, make sure to follow Cody at Matt Campbell Impersonator. Cody, what are you talking about?
Mostly talked about.
All right. Thank you for that. And you can find me on Twitter at SciTie Guy. I've been just being in tune with Cowboys training camp. Jaden Blue is looking good in the backfield. Looks like they might have a run game this year. Still stuff going on with the Micah stuff. I think he's going to get signed, but the Joneses are playing their stupid games like always, even though I can't stand them. But also, really looking and being proud of this White Sox rebuild. I actually have more confidence that it will be a lot better this time around. And then also, make sure to follow us on our forms of social media. YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. YouTube, did I say YouTube already?
Facebook.
Oh, yeah, Facebook and Twitch. On Twitch, we're Believe in ISU, BLEAV in ISU 2025, all lowercase letters. And also, please like and subscribe to the pod. Subscribe on YouTube to the channel. Subscribe to your favorite podcast provider, whether that be Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Podbean, really any of those outlets. We'd love to hear from you. Send positive reviews, word of mouth, all of that.
Yep. And then real quick.
Yes.
Not to interrupt you, but had to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, FanDuel. They've been great for us, so really yes. glad for them. And obviously, great sports book. So if you're looking to get into sports betting, FanDuel has a great service to help you out and have some great offers by signing up with them. Yeah. Thank you, FanDuel, for sponsoring our podcast.
Yes, thank you, FanDuel. And also, just a programming note. Be sure to tune in with us next Monday. We will be doing a joint show with Bosco's Boy, a Kansas State podcast. Stay tuned for our first game preview of the year. We are doing our show a week early because the host of Bosco's Boy and I will both be in Ireland. Stay tuned for that next Monday. It's going to be a treat. So to conclude the Believe in Iowa State podcast, I'm with Tyler Carter.
And Cody Vanciello.
This is the Believe in Iowa State podcast. Roll clones, baby.
Go Cyclones.
All right, we're good. Okay. Gotcha.